In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. For the last couple of years, a discussion has revolved around the idea of public domain characters used by independent creators in their comic books. We're going to be talking today with artist-writer Tim Seeley, who creates the independent series Hack Slash, a great horror adventure series that Tim has been smart with and has had a few crossovers with other horror properties. Things like Child's Play, The Chucky Doll, Halloween Man is coming up as well. But today we discuss the Hack Slash crossover with Reanimator. Tim will be discussing the current situation with that specific crossover, which goes through Hack Slash 15 through 17. We'll also be talking about his work on the new Exiles series for Marvel Comics. Tim is the new artist working with Chris Claremont. And Tim's series Hack Slash is up for a Scream Award on Spike. The awards are going to be on Tuesday night, and Tim will be talking about that nomination and what's going on leading up to the awards, which were held on Saturday. But we won't know the results until we watch on Tuesday night. But for now, we begin our conversation on the specifics of the Hack Slash Reanimator crossover and some of the pitfalls that creators should watch out for when involving themselves with what they think are public domain subjects.
Let's start, and let's assume that a lot of people don't know the full story of Reanimator, because I certainly didn't. I only knew it from the film. But this is a story that's in public domain by a very famous author, and I'll let you take it from there.
Sure. I mean, it's the basic story is that, you know, H.P. Lovecraft, around the 1920s, he was first starting to send out his writings for serialization. So he wrote the story Herbert West's Reanimator, which was the first thing he got published. And then, you know, when Reanimator, I mean, obviously, then, you know, H.P. Lovecraft went on to write a lot of stuff that was very popular. And then, you know, kind of over his career, kind of created a lot of mythos of the Cthulhu stuff and all that. And then, you know, after he died, the majority of his actual creations went into the public domain. Mm-hmm. The publication rights for the actual stories are still owned by a family friend. But, so, you know, so then, you know, flash forward 60 years, in the 80s, the director Stuart Gordon and producer, writer Brian Yuzna made the cult classic film. They funded it and produced it basically themselves without studio help.
Okay.
It's still owned by those guys. So basically, like, at the time, you know, Brian Yuzna, who produced the film and did some of the writing, didn't trademark the logo. He was advised that because it was public domain, that he didn't need to.
Okay.
So, you know, he made several films. He made three films in the series. And then when I was working on Halloween, the guy who was writing the Halloween stuff was friends with the guys who made the Reanimator stuff. So kind of suggested, you know, because he and I had originally talked about doing a Halloween Hack Slash crossover, but the license holders didn't want to do that because they kind of felt like, you know, Michael needed to be in his kind of own contained world. So
okay.
They did say, hey, you know, what might work really well is Herbert West from the films. And I was like, holy shit, I love those movies. I'd love to. So we started talking, totally came up with a great way to do the story. We were really excited about it. And then the problem we faced was that a company had sprung up in the meantime called Reanimator LLC, which had trademarked or attempted to trademark the name and logo for Reanimator. So with, you know, with even the dash that Brian Yuzna and Stewart had added to the title originally to sort of differentiate it from the original story. So when I tried to distribute it through Diamond, I received a cease and desist, which meant that Diamond wouldn't distribute it. It didn't mean necessarily that I was going to be, you know, going to court or anything. It just simply meant that I wouldn't be able to distribute it through Diamond because they have a no hands-off policy, basically, which, you know, they just don't want to be involved in anything that potentially could lead to them having to be involved in a court case.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's like crazy stuff. But basically what it means is that it stops me from being able to put out a book through the normal comic book distribution system, which kind of sucks because there is only one.
Absolutely, yeah. This isn't the early 90s, like, where you had Cap City and a couple other distributors. This is how stores and online stores get 99% of their merchandise.
Exactly. And and so understandably, Diamond, they do have sort of back off. They didn't want to be involved in cases between their vendors or any of their customers. So they do back off. But on the downside, it means that it leaves us to have to do it ourselves if we want to put the book out, which we do. So that will involve you're kind of just saying, screw this. I mean, the Railman LLC people did offer us the chance to basically buy their copyright, and they offered us like a cheap price. But what it would do is, if there ever came to a lawsuit between Brian Usna's company and this Railman LLC, they could use it potentially as a case against us, which is, they could say, well, they recognized our trademark. That means that they, it would add credence to their attempt, and we didn't want to do that.
Yeah, because
we weren't hurt.
Yes, because they only own the logo for what the movie makers used for the film. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, basically, it comes down to is the value of trademarking this is to capitalize on the success of a cult film. There's
right.
no value of it otherwise. There's no, there's no reason to do so. You could hypothetically call a story anything. The only value of it is that. And we feel like that's, the value that they're trying to use. So I don't want to help them, in their case, when I feel like, we went through the right people and we're actually using the film. We kind of feel like it's helping our friends to do this ourselves. So we're just going to distribute it through a company out of Chicago called Haven, which means, we'll sort of offer it through websites. We're calling retailers individually, finding out what they would have ordered, and we're going to try to make a go kind of doing it ourselves, which I guess, we'll really kind of find out, if it works. And I guess all we can really do is just ask people to, hey, if you like the book, if you're normally a reader, treat this like it's any other time you go to the comic store. You tell your comic book store that you want a copy, and they get it for you. That's kind of what we have to hope that people, respond to.
Yeah, this is going to be the customer going to a store and reminding him it's not going to be in the Diamond catalog like it normally is during this story. And it's three issues. It's 15, 16, and 17, correct?
Exactly. 15 did go through Diamond because, we had gotten our cease and desist after that issue had already been distributed. But it just means that if you need reorders of it, that Diamond can't do it. So, originally 15 was in comic stores. Wait a second.
No problem.
Chicago train blowing by.
By all means.
Okay, there you go. That adds a little local flavor to it.
Absolutely, man. It's been a while since I've had an a la carte or an al fresco interview, so this is good.
Yeah, nice, huh? But it basically just means that, this kind of goes. I mean, hopefully, we had it really easy because we do know most of the big chain stores, and the big chain comic book stores, it's not a problem because we can call them directly. And if they have like nine stores, like a Graham Crackers or six stores or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Like an Atomic Comics or something, it's very easy to just call that one store and say, well, how many do you want? But those stores, it won't be difficult for us. In fact, it's actually been a little bit easier because a lot of those stores are saying, well, we'll take extra because, we think it'll be harder for other people to get it. It is going to be a lot harder small stores that may escape our notice, that may not be on the internet as much as I am checking Newsarama on TBR.
Sure.
It's going to be harder for them, and that's where we want to make sure that we, if those stores can't get it, don't know about it, we're going to try to offer individual sales of the issues to normal people off the street that want to pick it up. We just want to make sure they go through their store first. Try your store. Try to get them to order it. We want to support local comic shops. We're all, sort of having that venue to sell comics. We don't want to go all yet. So, please try that.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, that's cool. Now, so let's assume, though, that people have gone to their stores and they, for whatever reasons, the store doesn't want to do it. Should you not, how do they obtain the item online? Going through you guys?
Yeah, you just go to the normal Devil's Due store, the www.devilsdue.net.
Okay.
There's a special section in the store right now. There's even an ad on the main site. which just allows people to order individual issues. You know, of course, I mean, yeah, and if you live, like, in the middle of nowhere or whatever, or, you know, it's going to be tough for you anyway, just do it this way. Totally understandable. We like it if you can go through a store, but if you don't have one or your store's not going to do it, this is totally acceptable. So, yeah, you know, you can order individual issues wherever. And we're also, we should be able to do, I know a lot of people do the sort of DCBS digital distribution. We should be able to do those stores, too.
Okay.
If we normally go to those stores, you know, it should be easy for us to also sell to those. It should be no different than, you know, than a normal comic book store.
Sure.
So we'll just get a hold of those guys and sell them some copies and sell some to you, which sounds silly, like how many, you know, different distribution things you have to go through, but we do want to make sure that we support, you know, people who normally get you your stuff. That's the whole idea.
Absolutely. Well, and you've built this book, Tim, you know, from the start. This is your baby, and you've done it with Devil's Due. And much like some other independent books out there, like The Walking Dead or Powers before, you know, when it was still an Image book, I mean, you have cultivated an audience not only represented by comic book fans, but by horror film fans as well. And your love for the genre has come through because of these crossovers that you've done, and you've always done them the right way. You did it with Child's Play, and you did it with, is Chucky Child's Play?
Absolutely.
Okay, because I didn't want to do the John Ritter problem child. You know, I'm like, oh shit, so Child's Play.
Although John Ritter was both in, he was in a Chucky film and Child's Play, so it's totally understandable that.
Well, you're saving me, man, because I'll be honest, I'm more of a sci-fi guy than a horror guy, but I always, I think horror, the way that filmmakers are, and that there's such a spirit of independence in the horror genre, unlike a lot of other genres, and, you know, a lot of guys that really started with shoestring budgets have been able to build empires on great ideas, and great filmmakers have come from that kind of independent film. And you know, that's really cool, and for, as a film buff, that's always fascinated me. So it's more about the process for me than the actual product, just because, I don't know, I'm a 1933 Universal kind of guy. You know, I can't help it, man. I love the old black and white stuff. But
oh, absolutely.
You know,
well,
but
I think it's one, you know, an interesting thing too about, you know, these horror films is at least historically a lot of horror films that were immensely successful. Were successful because they were so different than what, you know, horror is a genre that actually demands you take some risks. You know, it's very easy to make a sort of very bland, you know, sort of film that doesn't really affect anyone, doesn't scare anyone, isn't original enough,
yep,
or is too predictable. And a lot of times the studios in the past have done films that just didn't connect with viewers. But a lot of these guys who would come out of nowhere and get these budgets, you know, they would make a film themselves, you know, from, you know, going back to the original Halloween film, you know, which was a sort of self-funded and creative film,
yep,
to up to, you know, Evil Dead, to Reanimator, to Blair Project. You have all these films that, you know, they broke new ground because they were able to. They weren't relying on a studio. They were made for shoestring budgets. They were made by people who cared about making a film that they wanted to see. And in horror, you get a lot of that. And because the budgets can be small, you get a lot of that sort of thing. And that's what, you know, like a film like Reanimator is. It's a film made by fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's always relied upon the fact that it is not owned by a large studio or, you know, I mean, you're not going to see, like, you know, well, I don't know, maybe you will. At least for now, you're not going to see, like, a remake of Reanimator starring Tom Cruise or something because it is owned by, you know, these very quirky individuals with very specific taste and an ability to make a film that a studio would be terrified to make because it's too gory or too scary or too weird or too sexy, you know, and I hope, and a lot of independent comic books can do that as well. We're not reliant upon, you know, what the standards are for a successful superhero comic from DC or Marvel. We're not reliant upon, you know, those sort of things. So we can make a story that we can put our all into and kind of, you know, treat it as very individualistic. So, I mean, obviously I always sort of related to those filmmakers, like those horror filmmakers, and that's why, you know, it's hard with Hack Flash to try to... This is our sort of test. This is our sort of, you know, can we do this on our own? Can we rely upon our readers? Can we, you know, expect to make it when we have to go outside the system, you know? So that's ultimately the sort of big question we're asking here.
Well, and I'm sorry that, you know, you have to do this, you know, in this fashion to kind of, unfortunately, be the barometer to see where things are as far as, I mean, and this wasn't your intent, and Diamond has been very cool about, you know, and I'm glad that they're cool about you guys doing this independently or whatever and saying, yeah, you know, these are special circumstances. So it is going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds. And unfortunately, happening with the backdrop of Hack Slash being nominated for the Scream Awards on Spike, and that's a nice billboard, man. And I think it probably gave Kirkman some more notoriety for Walking Dead, and certainly the fact that he won. We're 6 days away. We're just actually under 7 days away for the Scream Awards, and you're up for best comic book, correct?
Yeah, and it's funny, actually, today we just found out that we're in the top four. So basically, you know, there's the six that are on the site, and then they pare it down to four, and those are the people that get to attend the event, and you don't find out who won, obviously, until the day of the filming, which is actually this coming Saturday.
So, wow.
I'll know before anybody else does how we did, but I get to go to L.A., so I guess we'll see how it goes, but... if I believed in karma or religion or any of that sort of thing, I would assume that getting the Spike TV nomination and getting to go to L.A. Was my punishment, or my reward, rather, for having this crazy shit going on with the Ranmir stuff. So, so yeah, I'd assume that was some kind of correlation. So.
Do you know when Reanimator LLC tried to obtain the trademark or put in the paperwork?
Our lawyer dudes, of course, are the ones that did all the actual sort of legwork on this actual stuff. But it's like 2005, I believe, or 2006, somewhere in there. I should have memorized all this shit. But I mean, obviously, it's quite a bit after, you know, even the first Rainier film coming out in 1989, and then, you know, the most recent one, I believe, coming out in 2003 or 2004. It's a good deal after. You know,
sure.
But obviously, you know, in trademark laws, what you find out pretty quickly is trademark law is kind of a little bit flexible, and it's not necessarily based on. You don't have to be right to get. You know, you have to be right morally. You just have to be on the ball.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, there could be a case made for it. I just think, you know, in general, the if you look at what people sort of believe or assume about this stuff, you know, just like. You and a couple other people who just were familiar with it from a movie standpoint, or others who were just familiar with it from, you know, it being a H.P. Lovecraft story.
Certainly.
You can see how there might have been confusion about, hey, do we have to trademark this? Do we have to, you know, whatever. So, and obviously if it wasn't for the fact that we deal with a sort of single distribution model in the comics industry, it probably wouldn't have affected us because we could have, if someone had sent us a cease and desist and there was like six distribution companies, we could have said, oh, yeah, fuck you. And we're going to care about it, you know? So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's just the difference of what you have to, you know, the size of the industry, the way it works.
Sure.
And, so, you know, but, you know, and obviously, you know, Brian Usna will probably contest, or is contesting, I believe, this copyright and stuff. And that's totally Brian's case, and I wish him all good luck and try to do everything I can not to hurt his case. So, you know, hopefully between those things they get settled up. And it's just, you know, it's just when you do a comic, you're kind of stuck. When you get stuck in the middle, you just hope that your readers know why.
Right.
Their book isn't on the stand, and they know how to get it, you know. And that's what we've been trying to do is just spread the word and like, I know a lot of indie books, a lot of creator-owned books suffer from perpetual lateness, and I know most of those are because people played too many video games.
Sure.
You know? And this is not the case in this particular instance. We were actually ahead. We were done. We were dedicated. It's just, you know, we had to deal with some stuff that I was not expecting to deal with.
Yeah, dude, you had to turn into Perry Mason, like, and really, like, get lawyered up and really learn a lot about trademark. And when you were telling me the first time you told me about the story, you know, I learned a lot from you, and I'm sure you've learned even more from your lawyers. And, you know, it goes back to something that came up over the Baltimore Comic-Con, and it's a dead horse subject, but a byproduct of it was when Kirkman and Bendis were having their panel about creator-owned books versus corporate books, Bendis made the comment of, you've got to be, you know, the CEO of your comic, and you really have to treat it like a business. And, you know, you're getting really the shittiest part of, you know, the job in terms of having to deal with the legalese, and especially given that, again, you were going through the right channels. As I said before, you've done that with all of these crossovers, and the horror community has always been very cool, at least from my observation, where everyone tries to help each other out. So, you know, you're trying to do the right thing and go through the right people who really did own the movie, and this opportunist company comes along with the sole purpose of, I don't know, making T-shirts, making hats. I don't even know. I don't know what they're doing. But
sure.
But clearly, all you're doing is trying to tell a story that involves some public domain characters and honoring the film and going to the right people and saying, hey, do you mind if I do this? And, I mean, you did mention to me as far as, you know, what I love, and my favorite part of the project is Joe Jesko's amazing cover for 15. Because it's hot. I mean, it's a great, sexy monster cover.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great piece. Very classic, very, you know, and you can see Joe having a good time on that piece, too. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's in a lot of the times that I've done these kind of projects, and obviously because I'm not rich, I'm trading on the goodwill of the fandom of people involved in these projects.
Yep.
You know, like, so, yeah, I mean, you can even see sort of in that way just, how clear it is that it's sort of like this is all built upon that film, those films that people watched on, you know, on VHS when they were younger, or they caught it on, you know, Up All Night or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I saw it on Cinemax.
exactly, you know, and that's where you see where the actual value of that sort of thing is, and you think it would just be so easy to go, well, clearly that's the point, you know, that's the reason to do this stuff, and you know. And that is one thing I do want to make sure that people who step into doing creator-owned books and all that sort of stuff are more aware of than at least I have been, which is, you know, I kind of came up on reading Savage Dragon, and you look on the indicia on the inside of Savage Dragon, and you know, he copyrighted God in one issue, or trademarked God, and just goofing around, you know, with that sort of, like, notion of trademark and ownership and stuff. And you do find out that there's a lot to it, you know, not necessarily that everyone has to deal with this kind of thing, but, you know, be smart about it. Obviously, if you're working on a limited budget, you know, don't go get yourself a super expensive lawyer and try to, like, you know, corner the market on this certain name, but do be aware of trademark law, be aware of those sort of things, especially if you deal with any kind of public domain stuff, and that includes, like, you know, from Dracula to you know, Hercules to Jesus Christ. You know, these are all things that are,
you bet,
that are public domain. But be aware of, like, what, you know, potential setbacks there may be for doing those sort of things. And, you know, familiarize yourself with trademark law and copyright law and kind of how those... I mean, obviously, you know, when I'm working for Marvel, I don't even think about it for a second.
Sure.
You know, what I have to do, like, if I draw a Psylocke, you know, in one panel, I'm not particularly worried about getting sued, you know? But, you know, if you're doing a creator-owned book, be aware of those things. I don't think people need to take law classes necessarily, but, you know, you should familiarize yourself. Be aware. It is a pain in the... it's potentially expensive if you have to hire a lot of lawyers. You know... And that is, you know, that's the one downside of that sort of thing in the grand sort of creator-owned versus company-owned world. That is another thing to take into consideration.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, you mentioned a lot of public domain characters. I think, you know, the excitement of superpowers coming out from Dynamite and everyone realizing that a lot of those heroes are in the public domain. Anyone can tell a Black Terror story. But you've got to be very careful of, your image of the Black Terror and that it doesn't match Alex Ross's current version, you know, and the various incarnations of the Black Terror we've seen in the post-Hillman Nader world of publishing back in the 40s. And I mean, yeah, you know, so yeah, it's tempting, but you know, like Tim just said, you got to be careful and make sure that you're not using any trademarked images or logos or likenesses. And I, you know, the Superman S, look at how that's changed from the 30s to its current iteration. And that, you know, and in fact, that whole Sonny Bono Act that extended the copyright law to 90 years as opposed to 75 years. We were talking about our first conversation, you even said, I think it was a combination of the Disney people and the Warner Brothers people, because that, you know, Steamboat Willie and the first image of Superman were both kind of coming due to fall into the public domain, or whatever versions of those that would technically become public domain.
I mean, you've got this really weird thing that happened. Originally, you know, characters in these sort of these images and stuff and stories, all these things, they belonged to one man, and that man was one man or woman, sorry, the original author.
Yes.
So Dracula, Bram Stoker,
yes.
You know, he owned Dracula. It wasn't a corporate copy. It wasn't owned by a faceless collection of you know, stockholders. It was owned by one guy. And when Bram Stoker died, those things ran up. You know, after a number of years after he died, Dracula is now owned by everyone. You can do Dracula story. Your mom can do Dracula story. Everybody can do Dracula story, because he's, you know, considered to be public domain. What you had eventually was corporations springing up, and corporations can live beyond a person, obviously. You know, 90 years for a corporation to be around is completely reasonable.
Sure.
And, you know, and 90 years after the guy who set it up died, it's completely reasonable to be around. So you've got corporations owning things, and they don't want to give up their trademark. Now, Bram Stoker couldn't give a shit less because he was fucking dead. But, you know, in the case of Disney, and even though, you know, Walt Disney is dead, the corporation still wants to keep those trademarks. So they're trying to extend those things. Now, I mean, you know, obviously there's arguments on both sides of whether they should be able to do that. You know, and obviously, like, things, parts of things often go into the public domain. For instance, the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons are in the public domain. Superman himself is not. So, which is just to say that you can distribute and play those cartoons without asking for DC or, you know, Warner Brothers permission.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try to do your own Superman story, you will get a big old cease and desist or a lawsuit on your ass.
You bet.
So, so yeah, I mean, it's obviously there's some very, you know, there's questions involved with that sort of thing. Obviously, an LLC, limited liability corporation, like the Random Matter LLC, is a corporation. It's not a person by definition. So for it to try to take over this copyright, you know, there's obviously questions involved there.
Yeah, and it's, again, it really just pissed me off. And I, you know, again, when I heard how it was done and in such an opportunist fashion, it's... I understand. I mean, you know, things are there. Bill Gates, you know, took, or was it, I forget if it was Gates or if it was Steve Jobs that, you know, took the Xerox technology out of the trash. And I guess it was Steve Jobs who did it. And, you know, Apple, a lot of their mouse technology came from discarded stuff that Xerox didn't want. And
right,
he just literally kind of grabbed it and, you know, turned it into the mouse. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm sure there's a bunch of computer wonks that are going to email me and correct me. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it's I understand how business works. But, again, it seems like you went the right way and talked to the right people. And it's it really is shitty that it isn't even the actual people that made the thing that are fucking with you. It's really this one opportunistic company that... has a logo and a claim to a logo that is shaky at best. So, well, you know, as Ditka said,
that's always the question, though. I'm glad that it was something that could be, you know, brought up and discussed, and that people could sort of, you know, take a sort of opinion and side on. You know, I mean, I think hopefully it works out the best, and I just want the readers to be able to get the book.
You bet.
So, you know. I believe it's www.tinyurl.com/hackflash, I think is the address. Or just go to www.devilsdo.net. You can go that, and on the front page, I believe, is an ad for the retailer discount bundles of the book, and I think also from that link you can order individually. So it's pretty easy. Otherwise, really, people can just email me. I'm on MySpace with the / MySpace, or just, you know, I'm very easy to get a hold of, so.
You bet.
I don't care. People can email me. It's fine.
Clearly, you're on this show, so you must be very easy to get. So nice going.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm standing behind a playground at 9 o'clock at night in construction because it's quiet here, so I can talk to you. So there you go.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, really, I don't want the cops to think, you know, there's some perv out by the park. I don't know what he's doing.
Well, I have my pants down, but that's different. That's totally different.
Well, that's
not
your
related.
No. Do you have a quick minute to talk about Exiles? Because
absolutely, sure.
Fantastic. Congratulations. Working with Chris Claremont's got to be amazing.
It's really fun because it's such a, you know, that was my, you know, 13, 14-year-old was when I discovered, you know, Uncanny X-Men, and Rogue had these protuberant nipples and drawn by Jim Lee and written by Claremont. I was like, what the hell? And it just lined up with my, you know, getting hair on the old boys downstairs. Just be really excited. And, you know, now it's still exciting now to sort of know that you're sort of working with, you know, with someone who you were originally, you know, it was a very big part of your comic book, you know, growing up. So, yeah,
sure.
Totally excited.
That's awesome, man. Now, who's on the current lineup of the Exiles team?
The current lineup is,
am I taxing?
I'm going to forget their name.
Exactly.
No, it's Psylocke from our the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
And there is Sabretooth from the Age of Apocalypse Universe. There is Gambit, but he's a different Gambit. He's from the from a universe where he's, in fact, the son of Namor and Sue Storm.
Wow.
And we have Kitty Pryde, otherwise known as Kat, who is from an undisclosed universe. Then we have Morph, who is the who's a version for, he was pretty much the big superhero on his planet. He's been a member since the first issue, that even back when Judd Winnick was writing it.
Okay.
And then we have Mystique, but it's a different Mystique from the alternate Earth. He's kind of a Basil Rathbone looking sort of quaint British dude. And then we have Sage, who is also from the Marvel Universe. She is the sort of living computer who was originally a part of the Extreme X-Men team that Claremont also wrote. So there you go. There's the lineup. And all kind of, you know, very sort of Claremont characters. All sort of lots of, you know, crazy identity-changing, you know, interesting sort of tweaks on personalities and alternate reality stuff. So. Yeah, it's all kinds of crazy. You know, so far I've drawn dinosaur, humanoid, Iron Man guys, and all kinds of crazy stuff. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, this, you know, it gives Claremont a chance to play with his characters out of continuity in a creative way. And it must appeal to you as well, because you get to screw around as well. And you know, how much input do you have as far as the new visual takes on some of these alternate versions?
Well, I mean, that's kind of one of the most fun things about the current issues is that, I mean, it's been going on in this new Exile series so far, is that the Cap Pride character, to sort of manifest herself in the different realities, she has to sort of pick a version of herself to sort of inhabit. And, you know, so that means that, you know, she could show up in the Age of Apocalypse version of herself, or the Marvel 2099 version of herself, or the, I don't know, the New Universe version of herself, whatever the case may be, or a million other sort of possibilities. So when, in Chris's script, it'll just say, you know, Cat shows up, do whatever you want. So I've been going crazy with with the versions of Kitty Pryde that showed. So, it's super nerdy. I made sure that mine were sort of firmly rooted in Marvel lore.
Okay.
Because I'm a nerd. So I hope people have a good old time with it. All my versions of Cat are actually like sort of jokes or iterations on the name, or it's, yeah, I'm a nerd. But yeah, you'll have a good time with it, I think, if you're looking. So
That's excellent. Now, is your first issue out, or when is your first issue coming out?
November. So my first issue is issue 14. So I know I just picked up issue 12 last week. So, yeah, like 13 should come out pretty soon, and then my issue is 14, and then it'll be pretty regular after that because I think I'm even a little bit ahead. So because I chug along, man. I'm a speed demon. So
yes, you are.
Should be. So, yeah. But, yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, just, you know, I was familiar with doing team books, so I did G.I. Joe. So, like,
sure.
You know, my editors were sort of like, oh, dude, there's a lot of characters. I'm like, shit, a lot of characters. My first G.I. Joe book, I drew 75 different guys. So don't worry about me.
No, you know, and it is that facility, I think, to do team books and your speed and your quality. I mean, let's put that in there. Don't forget. You really are. You're a double threat, Tim. You're a great writer. I think you're a great artist, and I'm very happy that you've made this jump now to Marvel, and you're going to get a broader audience, and I'm glad to see that your work is going to be exposed to more people who get to appreciate what you can do.
Well, I appreciate that, John, and, you know, I'll always give credit that you have always interviewed me, even when I had nothing interesting to talk about. And was standing in a park with construction when the train roared by. I'll appreciate that always.
So. Excellent. Hey, like I always tell you, man, all I want to do is, like, the audio commentary of whenever this shit, like, gets DVD. Like, when the Hack/DV, you know, movie finally happens, let me, you know.
Right on.
Or I get to do the behind-the-scene, you know, interviews and stuff like that.
Well, that'd be perfect. Dude, you're the guy for it.
There you go.
Yeah, I've actually already made that deal with another buddy of mine for... He wants to write the making of book.
Oh, excellent.
Like the books that kind of come up. I made that deal already, too. So, yeah, dude, you can be the guy who goes around and, like, you know, interviews people behind the scene. You got to be sexy, though, to make sure you wear something kind of appropriate to that. So,
well,
whatever, that's cool.
If I got to be sexy, I better be invisible then and just stick with the voice. That's all right. Let's be honest. But, no, it's, you know, that... like I said, man, good luck with the Spike Awards. I want to hear about it because Kirkman had great stories when he went the first year.
It should be interesting. It should definitely be interesting. And, you know, I've been to L.A. a number of times, but I'm told that people throw mean parties. So as a guy who embarrassed himself at a small bar in Chicago, you can imagine what I can do in a room filled with celebrities. So,
yeah, I mean... And actually, this is good. I mean, that's the great thing. I mean, because the Spike Awards, fine, whatever. You know, it's another television award show. But it looks like the hotties show up for this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously Spike's whole thing is sort of to be the entertainment network for dudes. And with such shows as Mansers, you can assume that they know their market. So, yeah, it should be fun. And I know last year Megan Fox was at the show, so... If she shows up this year, she'll have to make sure she has a real bodyguard because I'm going to be chasing her around. So.
Hey, maybe you can do some casting for future, you know, Hack/. Who would you want? You know, I should ask you, by the way, what is the status of the movie deal that you had last year? I mean, is it still going on? Are you, you know?
It's still going on. I mean, one of the interesting things about film is that it's so much slower than working in comics, and so. You know, deals kind of, they really want to make sure that they, I mean, you're talking about a lot more money. I mean, if I spend $500 on making a comic book, you know, you can imagine, you know, when $15 million is at stake, that people are a little bit more cautious. But, yeah, they're still, like, getting together, you know, scripts. They're working on script, apparently. Train.
No problem.
Excuse me.
You're like Cary Grant in North by Northwest, man. I don't want you to train.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, apparently, well, this week is when a script is coming in from Justin Marks, I believe. And,
oh, wonderful.
Everybody's pretty psyched. I mean, you know, they want to make sure they make announcements when they're sure. They don't want to, like, feed kind of rumor and all that sort of stuff, but... It's always been going on. It's never stopped. It's
okay,
never,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's just always kind of been an interesting and very well-considered process, I'd say. Because, I mean, if it was up to me, I'd have, it had been filmed already, and you know, it would have been done trauma style, and it would have cost, like, I don't know, $1,200 and, you know, all that, whatever. But, no, I mean, I appreciate that they really do care about it, and they're trying to make sure they do the best possible project. So, yeah, that there's cool news within the next couple of weeks. You know, we'll see.
Excellent. And obviously plenty of Hackslash product available at devilsdo.net. And,
yep.
And at your
week,
very...
This week, tomorrow, actually, we did a reprint of issue one called The New Reader Halloween Treat. It has all kinds of stuff if you've never checked out the book. It has a character guide and a origin story and a sort of summary in the disguise of a diary to get you up to speed. So if you've never tried it out, kind of plug it. This is a good opportunity to pick it up this week for the low, low price of whatever, $3 or whatever that comics are. That was just kind of done out of realization that we sold an awful lot of omnibuses to people that probably weren't buying the regular series, and we thought, man, we could probably sell them something cheaper that they could try.
Very cool. Well, that's great.
So, yeah.
No, man, hey, you know, good luck with it, and that's great. Then that's something to look forward to this week, and this will be out after New Comic Book Day, so unfortunately, but it will be out.
Oh, yeah, so stick around and get your asses back to the store.
There you go.
There you go.
Absolutely. No, and good luck with the Scream Awards, and we'll look forward to the beginning of your run on Exiles with issue 14 in November.
All right, thank you very much, John.
That's Tim Seeley. Don't forget to have your comic book store go to devilsdo.net and order the issues for Hackslash 16 and 17. And again, all they have to do is go right to the Devil's Due website, devilsdo.net. Help Tim out during these couple issues and make sure that you get your books and that everybody's happy. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget that Word Balloon is all over the internet. We're at Newsarama.com, at iTunes. Of course, we're at our own website, wordballoon.com, where you'll find well over 150 other programs featuring interviews with comic book creators. Any questions or comments about the show, you can go to the Word Balloon message board. There's a link right there at wordballoon.com. You can also email me, john@wordballoon.com. And make sure you stick around, because October is a great month, and more great interviews are on the way, not only this week, but all the way through Halloween. I think you're going to enjoy them. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.